I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's vault time. It is Saturday. We're going to venture into the vault for a classic episode of Stuff to Blow Your Mind from August 2016 about food additives.
Yeah, this is the one where we talked about MSG and the degree to which it's been demonized as some sort of nefarious foreign substance that's added to food, when really it's far more mundane than that.
As far as I can recall, this is the only time I have ever eaten on mic. So please be ready to get grossed out when you hear our chewing sounds.
Yeah,
later
we
on
sampled
this episode.
Some MSG in this episode. And in fact, the MSG
just took a bite out of a big old hunk of it.
Well, the shaker is still in the office. I actually used it yesterday on some microwave lasagna.
Oh, yeah? So, was it good?
Yeah, of course. It enhanced the flavor.
Nice.
So, all right, if you've listened to this episode before, then prepare to experience it again. If not, be prepared to have what you think you know about MSG completely turned on its head.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And Robert, what if I told you that a silent killer worse than alcohol, nicotine, and drugs is likely lurking in your kitchen cabinets and even your child's school cafeteria?
Oh, man. That's rough, because silent killers are the worst killers. I far prefer the loud ones, so I know they're coming. And of those substances that you mentioned, only some of those are my favorites. So, I'm instantly concerned. I'm going to start looking around in my cabinets and trying to figure out where this nefarious force is hiding.
Now, lest I be accused of plagiarism, I should give attribution. That is a quote from an article on an alternative medicine website called Mercola.
Okay.
That is about MSG, the food additive MSG. You've often heard of it associated with Chinese food, probably. It's monosodium glutamate. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. But we wanted to start with some of the scare tactics, because you had to hear it right here that MSG is, quote, worse than drugs. Worse than drugs.
I love that the blandness of that statement. Worse than all drugs.
Worse than drugs.
But surely better than some drugs. And then also, are we just talking about what drugs, right? The drugs that take our pain away or the drugs that that ruin us? I mean, there's so many different interpretations of that statement.
Quick side note, Robert. What's your favorite fictional drug from a movie or book?
Oh, you know, I have to go with the spice, but I also like Samuda, which is the drug that they that some individuals in the Dune universe take, and then they listen to some sort of weird music, Samuda music, that mm-hmm. can only really be processed while you're taking this particular drug.
Well, MSG is worse than that, too, because what does it do? I don't know. It does a lot of stuff, apparently.
If you listen to everyone who has ever complained about MSG, that has ever proposed a negative symptom of taking MSG, then it sounds like just the worst thing imaginable.
Okay, so Robert, tell me your MSG story. How did you become acquainted with this killer, the silent killer chemical?
All right, so growing up, I don't remember ever being privy to any direct anti-MSG messaging. Like, nobody had me watch a video. Nobody made me read a paper about it. It was just this thing that you just heard, oh, well, MSG is to be avoided. You go to the local Chinese restaurant in your small American town, there's likely to be a no MSG sign there on the wall just to, uh-huh. to let you know before you even think about coming in the door that there is going to be no MSG. And not even knowing what it was, I just kind of had it in my mind that it was some sort of chemical, some sort of cheating substance that allowed the individuals that are making the food to trick you into enjoying something.
It's the anabolic steroids of food.
Yes.
It's the doping of food.
But as we're going to discuss in this episode, there's virtually nothing to any of this this fear mongering, decades worth of fear mongering that still refuses to completely go away.
Yeah, I think we will in the end probably be able to speculate a good bit on where a lot of this fear comes from. But I encountered it too when I was growing up. So I remember one of my favorite restaurants when I was a kid was this little brick storefront Chinese restaurant in Chattanooga, Tennessee called China Lee.
Okay.
I loved going there. They made some delicious Szechuan beef. I don't know if I'd still think it was good if I went there today. I don't know if they're still open. But at the time, I loved it. And I would go there and I would, you know, I was a kid, but if you had this experience at Chinese restaurants when you were little where you just like eat to the point of pain and then you'd keep going. but I also remember this slight psychological taint to the experience because I would hear adults talking about Chinese food and MSG. There was this clear link in my mind that I'd overheard from adult conversation, and I didn't really understand it. But what I generally did get was that MSG was some sort of dangerous chemical – and it was all in Chinese food. But if it was so dangerous, why did we eat it? Why did my parents take me?
Yeah, and then the other side of it too for me is that, okay, it's something that they're using to cheat you into they're cheating. They're making the food taste better than it is. But the same thing can be said of pretty much every food additive that has ever been. Every spice in your cabinet is a way to cheat and make food taste better.
Cooking, this is what salt is.
Yes, that's what salt, pepper, everything else like that. Just the art of cooking is, hey, how can we make this particular slab of protein, this particular heap of vegetables, how can we make this biomass taste better and be more digestible for the human body?
Yeah, but of course, I don't know. I got this message somehow. So when I was a kid, I do remember one instance where a friend of mine was sick. Mm-hmm. He was like laid out on the couch for a couple days. And I remember it was attributed to the MSG content of some Chinese food he'd eaten the day before. I don't know where that idea came from. I don't know if their doctor told them that or if that's just what a parent concluded. But yeah, that's what they said. And then later, I think I softened a little bit on MSG, but in another disgusting way. Because the next time I remember encountering it in my life, I was in college. And a friend and roommate of mine at the time was teaching me how to make a recipe for this dip that came from his family. I think his grandmother had made it or something.
Mm-hmm. All the recipes you learn in college tend to be a little suspect.
I wouldn't judge this friend of mine by this dip, but the dip in my memory is a little gross. So it had Philadelphia cream cheese, chopped up sandwich meat, which I believe was Budig beef,
okay,
and then sliced green onions, and the fourth ingredient was a container of Shake-On seasoning called Accent. And I was like, what is this? I think I might have seen this in my grandmother's kitchen cabinet, but otherwise I didn't know what it was. And it said, wakes up food flavor. Well, that sounds good. You don't want your food to be asleep. So I looked at the ingredients, and the primary ingredient, or actually the one ingredient in this food flavor alarm clock, was monosodium glutamate.
MSG.
The stuff that had supposedly laid out my childhood friend with a body leveling illness and the stuff that I always heard these creepy rumors about.
Yeah, you actually brought in a little container of accent. And one of the things I love about it is that, first of all, there's no mention of MSG. Monosodium glutamate is mentioned once on the back, and presumably they don't have to say contains MSG because it is pure MSG.
You know, they save on the printing for this thing because they don't have to print ingredients every time. It just says ingredient and ends with a T, colon, monosodium glutamate.
But it's really an attempt to rebrand it, right?
Yeah.
Accent instead of MSG, because MSG sounds, I mean, it's the letters are tainted for us. Because of these just decades of negative connotations, which we'll get into.
And I would say it's also by the general problem of chemophobia, people being afraid of chemical names of things, which we'll get to in the end. And I think we should end by, number one, having an accent or monosodium glutamate, if you want to avoid the branding, taste test on mic. And then see if anything horrible happens to us. And then also we should suggest some rebranding.
Yes. So as we're going, start thinking of new names for MSG, ways we can reclaim this chemical for our tasting pleasure.
Right. So we should go back and tell the story of MSG. Like, where did this food additive come from?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get to the origin story here. Monosodium glutamate. This chemical was discovered by Japanese chemist Kikunae Ikeda back in 1907. So he was investigating flavoring in asparagus, tomatoes, and especially dashi seaweed soup that has a strong umami flavor, that pleasant, savory taste.
Yeah, we're much more familiar with umami these days. We hear about it all the time in cooking shows and stuff like that. Now, I think decades back, people were way less familiar with the concept of umami, exactly what it was. But umami, what is it? It's that deeply savory, meaty flavor. It's not the same as something being salty, but it's that kind of deep flavor that you get from cheeses and meats and tomatoes. It's there in anchovies. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's almost – there's some wonderful descriptions out there for umami. And umami is such a wonderful one-word description because just rolling off your tongue once you've tasted it, the two just go perfectly together. But yeah, you kind of have to have tasted umami, and most of us have, to really appreciate it.
So Japanese cuisine obviously had this concept of umami. They knew what this delicious savory flavor is. But what Ikeda was able to do was to pinpoint the chemical cause of this flavor, which was this substance that we now know as glutamate.
Yes. In particular, he pinpointed glutamic acid. So this is an amino acid, non-essential because the human body and various plants and animals can produce it on their own. And in the body, glutamic acid is often found as glutamate, one of the most abundant neurotransmitters in the body. And it plays an important role in memory and learning. And according to the FDA, you can probably consume 13 grams of it a day in the protein in your food.
Right. So glutamate's already there in your diet.
Yeah.
Almost definitely you're eating foods with glutamate in them.
Yeah. If you're having tomatoes, glutamate. If you're having Parmesan cheese, glutamate. And certainly if you're having some of the more processed food items out there, various potato chips, et cetera, you're having glutamate. Glutamate is just part of eating. As humans.
Yeah, so there's no magic going on, right?
Right.
This is just a standard dietary chemical, and as such, we do have receptors that are sort of programmed to taste it.
Yeah. All that Ikeda did here is he took that naturally occurring glutamate and he solved the problem of then, well, how do I synthesize it? How do I mass produce it? How can I get this in a form that's stable to the consumer? And basically what he did here is he figured out he could synthesize the molecule by first extracting the glutamate from seaweed and then mixing it with water and just common table salt to stabilize the compound. Thus, monosodium glutamate, MSG, is born.
It's table salt and it's glutamate.
Yeah, we really can't drive that home enough, that there's no like extreme chemical process here. There's no weird magical ritual involved. This is just salt and glutamate that come together into a stable form.
So I have to tell you that I don't know where I encountered this idea, but years ago, what I heard about the way MSG works in your mouth is that it literally, quote, tears holes in your tongue to make you taste things more intensely. I can't remember where I came across this, and I know I passed on this piece of false information to people plenty of times.
Like it tears a hole in the fabric of our reality.
Yeah.
And then demon tastes from another universe come in. I never heard anything quite that extreme, but I do remember hearing that it like opens up the taste buds with the emphasis being that it's doing so in an unnatural way.
Yeah.
In an almost like a drug-induced way.
Right. It would be fascinating to find out where these rumors started about its mechanism of action. But anyway, so it went on to become a popular commercial food additive. It wasn't just anymore people putting glutamate-rich foods into their foods to season it. Like you could put Parmesan cheese or seaweed or something like that into your food to boost the glutamate content. Or you could just isolate monosodium glutamate and add that to increase this umami flavor without adding the other ingredients.
Right. I mean, basically, especially now with umami, I feel like it's been very much a favorite keyword among foodies over the past decade, and maybe longer. But there are plenty of ways to glute up your food, to get that glutamate in there without MSG. MSG is just kind of a quick and easy way to do it.
Right.
So this quick and easy way is rolled out by the Japanese company Ajinomoto, and it's you have this instant crystalline powder that's ready to just sprinkle on your food, and it's an instant hit, of course. They patented it in 1909, and today the form that you encounter tends to be made from beets and corn. It's known as MSG in the States, but Akita's name still sticks elsewhere in the world. Ajinomoto, or Essence of Taste. You can still buy it with under that name at various, anywhere you buy, your local Asian market should have it with that title. And I should also point out that that Akita was tremendously successful with this. He was apparently fabulously wealthy in the early 20th century Japan, died in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. But this was he really hit it out of the park with this fabulous flavor enhancer. So what could possibly go wrong? What could possibly stop this juggernaut of taste from just taking over the world?
Well, we will answer that question right after we get back from this break.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astaproallergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. So, Robert, MSG, glutamate, big flavor success story in the history of food flavoring and additives.
Yes, big flavor success story.
Absolutely huge.
It is immediately a hit just throughout Asia. It allows people to give a meaty taste to non-meaty dishes. I've read that it was especially popular among Buddhists abstaining from meat during periodic abstinence periods, various meat-related fasts. And in America, too, and in Canada, elsewhere in the world, it really gains popularity. I mean, you especially have to look back to World War II era, post and pre-war America, to see just how ready we were for a flavor enhancer like this. On one hand, you had the military-industrial complex here, all right? You had the U.S. military needing to boost the flavor in otherwise dull soldier rations, so they turned to MSG.
Uh-huh.
Easy way just to enhance some limited food options there.
Easier than adding bacon to everything.
Right. And then industrialization of all that food, it comes home with them after the war into the American household. But even before World War II, we were essentially priming ourselves for such an advancement through the home economics philosophy. So there was recently a wonderful interview on NPR's Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Married culinary historians Jane Ziegelman and Andy Coe appeared to promote their book, A Square Meal, The Culinary History of the Great Depression. it's a great interview. Yeah. Definitely check it out. But they point out that the home economists of the age, they were not really into flavor. They were saying, all right, you need to be fed. You need to be healthy. You have limited means of pulling that off. Here are some strategies to do it.
Yeah.
You can worry about spice when things are going a little better for you. So they pushed American science-based ways to get the best out of available food rations, often in bizarre dishes, such as one that they discuss in the interview as being, quote, wrong in every possible way, was a recipe that featured canned corned beef, plain gelatin, canned peas, vinegar, and lemon juice.
Oh, boy.
So
Oh man, these old recipes you see from like magazines from the World War II era, where it's like, yeah, pour a can of lima beans and spam together. There you go.
but you can see where it's like they're engineering a meal. It's an engineering approach to the American meal, and so MSG is perfect for that. Crystals that you sprinkle on there.
Yeah, it's modernism brought to food.
Yeah, and it was apparently when it was first marketed to the American housewife. It was in this slender little bottle, full of the flavor crystals. It seemed like the future had arrived in the form of this this wonderful enhancer. And here's another important little fact that Ziegelman and Co. point out, though. The home economist of the day, who were creating all these strange recipes to make the best out of the available rations, they could have found a lot of great, healthy, and flavorful ways to get the most out of those rations if they turned to America's immigrant communities.
Right.
But of course, for a number of reasons, including implicit or even overt racial bias or xenophobia, they didn't do it. And I'm not just talking about, certainly Asian immigrants, but even like Italian immigrants. They had various tactics to make the best out of the available rations. So with Italian immigrants, of course, depending on more on pasta. One of the examples they point out is using dandelion greens that Italian immigrants carried that tradition with them, and that would have been a wonderful tactic to educate the American public about, but they didn't. Instead, it's more like gelatin and meat and stuff.
Yeah. Well, us who live in big cities in America today, we're just so used to international cuisine. Mm-hmm. I think it's a thing that's become thoroughly part of American culture to have a Chinese restaurant, a Mexican restaurant, a Thai restaurant, an Italian restaurant, and all that. And it can be kind of hard for us to imagine what it was like for, I don't know, maybe a lot of Midwesterners or something like that to see these strange foods from exotic lands.
Yeah. And, well, I feel like we can all in many cases, we can look to older members of our family.
Yeah.
Particularly, I remember, I think there are stories of this with grandparents on both my side and my wife's side of the family. Both of them had very similar stories about going to an ethnic restaurant. In my own grandfather's case, it was a Mexican restaurant, and didn't want to try any of the more exotic food there. Ordered an American hamburger and complained for the rest of his life that they served him a hot hamburger. It was a harrowing experience. But I feel like this is kind of a universal experience among a lot of older Americans and now in many cases deceased Americans, where suddenly there were all these more flavorful options, these exotic options, these new options, and it's only natural to approach those new flavors with a certain amount of skepticism, to say nothing of your own taste, your own palate being less inclined to enjoy that new barrage of flavors.
Right. But of course, as we have warned you, at the end of this great MSG success story did come some backlash.
Yeah. And when we say success story, we're not just talking about the Chinese restaurants, but it's being used in everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's in children's cereals.
It's in soup.
It's in soup. It's just all over the place. It's just become a standard part of the industrialization of food, but also just cooking in your kitchen. And then we enter a period in the early 60s where people began to question some of the chemicals in their food. There was a big book that came out in 62 by Rachel Carson titled Silent Spring. Mm-hmm. That kicked off a great deal of backlash just against chemicals in cooking in general.
I mean, I don't think I'd try to blame Rachel Carson for irrational chemophobia.
No.
But indirectly, it might have had this unintended influence.
It starts this narrative in many people's minds. It forces us to ask some important questions about how our food's coming together and where it's coming from.
Right.
But as we all know, a little information can sometimes be just enough to spin off some paranoia.
Okay, Robert, where did this narrative of Chinese restaurant syndrome come from?
Well, everyone seems to trace it back to one particular letter published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1968.
Okay.
All right. And it's actually written by a Chinese-American doctor by the name of Robert Ho Man Kwok. And he claimed that 20 minutes after eating at a northern Chinese food restaurant, so we're talking, you know, strong flavoring, seasoning, wheat flour, as opposed to you know, more the spicy punch of central Chinese cooking or any of the other various culinary traditions to be found in China.
I think northern Chinese cooking is less rice-centric, right? It has more like wheat noodles and things like that.
Yeah, rice south, wheat north. So he's saying, all right, I ate at this North Chinese food restaurant, and that resulted in, quote, numbness at the back of the neck, gradually radiating to both arms and the back, general weakness and palpitation.
Okay, so he ate a big meal.
That's the thing, and that's one of the questions that keeps coming up for me as I read any of these accounts is, like, who among us has not eaten restaurant food? And in many cases, eaten far more restaurant food than we should have and paid a price.
Yeah, you gorged yourself on some salty delights and then you felt kind of bad afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, it was salty and it was rich and it was – we all have those stories. It's a little much to start looking around for the one secret ingredient that caused it. Now, in Robert Ho Man Kwok's letter, he had a couple of theories. He said, well, maybe it's a certain cooking wine that they're using. Maybe it's just that high sodium content, which certainly would not be unheard of in North Chinese cooking. Or perhaps it's that MSG.
Mm.
Now, not everyone bought this right away, as Ian Mosby points out in his excellent paper, That Wonton Soup Headache, The Chinese Restaurant Syndrome, MSG and the Making of American Food, 1968 through 1980. There was actually one reader who wrote in and congratulated the journal for fooling its readers and suggested that the real author of the letter was surely one Dr. Hugh Man Kwok, as in, I guess, like a crock of...
I guess that's a play on Ho Man Kwok.
Ho Man Kwok, yeah. But instead, it's not a great joke.
No.
I'm not putting it out as a great joke. But certainly, here's an example of someone saying, hey, this sounds like malarkey. Why'd you even print this letter?
Well, even if this guy was correct, that's no need to make fun of somebody's name.
Exactly, yeah. But the thing is, this is not the only person who wrote back in. Others wrote in with shared experiences. Though not all about Chinese or even Japanese cuisine, there were even some who wrote in about kosher delis where they were having this experience. So almost immediately there's this sense of other, there's a sense of xenophobia in the equation.
Now, Robert, I have a hypothesis that I think maybe we should – I don't know if we're tricky enough to test this, but sometime we should try out something like this. Just say like, hey, have you ever noticed after you – and then name some common but not all too common phenomenon. Like, you ever notice how after you eat lamb or, you know, something like that. I guess I thought of that because of your name. you have this strange feeling. We will get people writing in saying like, oh, yeah, I've had that before. Whatever it is, I'm pretty sure we'll get it.
Like, anytime I drink a lot of fizzy water, I feel like I am going to float up towards the ceiling and grind up in a fan.
Have you ever noticed that every time you drink one of those energy drinks that has taurine in it, you start to see over the dunes of time?
Yeah. I mean, if enough people just sort of raise the question, then we begin to find the answer in our own recollection.
That's happened to me.
I did feel a little weird after that last big meal I ate at that Chinese restaurant. But that's one level, right? Just a bunch of people talking about it and saying, hey, did you feel weird after you had General Tso's chicken? Which they wouldn't have at this point, I don't think, as it had not quite been invented yet, if I'm remembering the timeline correctly. But what complicates things is that science then enters the scenario, as well it should, right? I mean, science enters the scenario to answer questions, to get to the bottom of what, if anything, is going on here.
Right, so it looks like we needed to have some studies, some organized scientific investigation of whether MSG is really causing people's eyes to fall out and their to bleed from the ears and their arms to leap out of their sockets.
Well, I mean, you're exaggerating, but not too much. So basically the whole episode here gains legitimacy when neurologist Robert Bick and pharmacologist Herbert H. Schomburg at Albert Einstein College of Medicine published an article in Science on February 21st, 1969. In this experiment, they administered MSG orally and intravenously to test subjects and then concluded that MSG could produce the Chinese restaurant syndrome in typical recipe dosages. So that's essentially the big first scientific shot fired here, where suddenly there's a study that seems to back up what everyone is feeling and reporting about their symptoms following consuming Chinese food.
Wait a minute. You said administered MSG orally and intravenously?
Yeah.
How many foods can you think of that are fine when you eat them and you eat them all the time, but if you were to administer them intravenously would be a big problem?
Yeah, exactly.
Hook me up to the soy sauce IV.
Indeed, and that's one of the problems that continues to raise its head throughout the scientific investigation of MSG. Is like, what kind of dosages are we talking about, and then how is it being consumed?
Yeah.
Is it being consumed on an empty stomach? Is it because it's on food? You wouldn't like really be taking just straight MSG.
Right.
And then on top of that, are you shooting up with MSG? Something that nobody is doing. It is not on the menu at any restaurant. Uh-huh. I guarantee.
I guess they're trying to, I don't know, anticipate a scenario where somebody accidentally stabs himself with a fork and then an MSG container spills into the wound. And
well, and there's also a larger problem here, and that is as they laid out, MSG was widely used in Asian cooking, but it was also all over the U.S. food industry.
Right.
So why were there not widespread accounts of these symptoms popping up because someone had a bowl of soup? Why are there not cases all over Asia where the stuff had already had had a couple of decades head start on
right.
everybody? You know, why didn't everybody in China, why didn't everyone in Japan suffer these symptoms when they were eating food with MSG in it?
And why not the foods naturally containing glutamate?
Yeah. And as Ian Mosby pointed out in that article, as early as 1969, 58 million pounds of MSG were being produced per year in the United States. So it's in breakfast cereal, TV dinners, frozen vegetables, condiments, baby food, canned soup. It's everywhere, and nobody's talking about it except in reference to Chinese restaurants and occasionally kosher delis.
Well, it sounds at that point like some cultural concerns might be as strongly motivating this worry as any scientific or health concerns.
Oh, yeah. And of course, other studies also came out pretty early to sort of spin this further out of control. In May 1969, psychiatrist John W. Olney published a study in Science that saw large doses of MSG injected into mice, which subsequently suffered a host of distressing symptoms.
Yeah, I bet they did.
Yeah. And he specifically raised the question of MSG in human pregnancy. And by July, Olney, Bick, and Schomburg, the two gentlemen from the previous study, they joined up with consumer advocate and future presidential candidate Ralph Nader to urge a Senate committee to ban the use of MSG in baby foods. And they got a number of companies to drop MSG that way, but the National Research Council ruled that it was fit for human consumption, but not necessarily by infants.
Yeah, so we want to emphasize that, as I've read in multiple critiques, a lot of these early studies of MSG were just plagued with flawed methodology.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen claims that there's the problem of injecting it intravenously in huge quantities into mice and then saying like, this seems like what would happen if you ate some with a meal. I've seen some reviews that also claim that early studies were just not properly blinded. You tell mm-hmm. people like, hey, we're going to give you some of this creepy chemical called MSG. Tell me how you feel after you eat it.
Yeah, and plus, you know, just think of your spice rack, your spice cabinet. Virtually anything in there, if you're taking a high enough dosage, you're going to hurt yourself.
Right.
I mean, nutmeg, for instance.
Cinnamon challenge.
Yeah, cinnamon challenge is another one. Like, these are both substances where if you take the right amount, then it's either it's just tasty. Maybe it's even has some slight beneficial qualities. But if you take a lot of it, you're going to make yourself sick. In the case of nutmeg, you might have like the worst high of your life. Do not try it.
Really? The worst? Trust me.
One of the worst. Like all the accounts I've read of nutmeg induced psychological effects, it's dreadful. It's not worth trying. But it's been pointed out.
So when they say MSG is worse than drugs, is it worse than nutmeg?
I can't see that it would be. I don't know. Basically, bottom line, you take too much salt, you're going to hurt yourself. If you drink too much water, you're going to hurt yourself.
Uh-huh.
And certainly if you take too much monosodium glutamate, you are probably going to hurt yourself. But it comes down to the question, though, how are typical amounts of MSG impacting people?
Well, this does bring me to a question that I was curious about, not necessarily about the long-term effects or the supposed Chinese restaurant syndrome, but I was like, what's the acute toxicity of this stuff? Surely it's a food additive. This has to have been studied. Acute toxicity is expressed in terms of LD50. You know, what's the dosage per body weight that kills 50% of lab animals that take it? And so I looked that up, and there is indeed a study on the acute toxicity of MSG from 2013 called Monosodium Glutamate Toxic Effects and Their Implications for Human Intake, a review. And I just want to read, quote, according to a joint inquiry by the governments of Australia and New Zealand in 2003, a typical Chinese restaurant meal contains between 10 and 1500 milligrams of MSG per 100 grams. I guess that's 100 grams of serving.
Okay.
The oral dose that is lethal to 50% of subjects, LD50, in rats and mice is 15,000 to 18,000 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. That's 15 to 18 grams of this stuff for every kilogram of your body. By comparison, salt, you know, table salt, sodium chloride, has an LD50 of 3,000 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. So as far as acute poisoning goes, the LD50 of MSG is more than five times greater than that of regular table salt. You can kill yourself with a fifth as much salt. And at this rate, I did a little math. I hope my math is right here. If it is, a 160-pound or 72.5-kilogram adult would have to eat at least 1,088 grams or about 2.4 pounds of MSG to attain lethal toxicity.
Okay. So
That's a lot of accent.
Yeah, that is a lot of accent. Certainly, I mean, how much is in the container that you brought in here?
Let's see. This is 2 ounces or 56 grams. Okay. So 56 grams to 1,080. I mean, you'd be eating a lot of these.
Yeah.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics, in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Ilya Kani, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so there's a lot of back and forth that takes place after these initial studies. Dozens of studies come out in the 1970s. Some confirm, some contest Olney's findings. The harshest critics accuse him of fear-mongering and exaggerating his findings. And you also see a split overall, with some studies looking at supposed long-term consequences of MSG, others looking at for short-term CRS symptoms. All over the studies were inconclusive. And a strong vein, if it's not already obvious, a strong vein of xenophobia runs through all of this.
Yeah.
And Ian Mosby does a great job pointing this out in his article, which I'll link to on the landing page for this episode. Says that, you know, the notion here that MSG is so harmful doesn't really resonate as much in Canada, and certainly not outside of Chinese restaurants in the United States. And you see this tangent that runs through some of the studies, some of the critics who are saying, well, the Chinese are just misusing it. Chinese Americans, Chinese immigrants are misusing MSG.
Well, if the Campbell's company wants to put a little MSG in the soups, I'm sure they're doing it responsibly. But I mean, those Chinese restaurants, they can't be trusted.
Yeah, clearly they're tricking us into loving their food so much. By using a reckless amount of this additive, so I mean, which is just completely nuts. Forget the fact that cases of any kind of like CRS were virtually unknown in China and Japan. No, Chinese cooking was somehow excessive or bizarre. Both of those descriptive terms were thrown out in some of these papers, enough to make MSG seem like a problem, along with the idea that MSG was used in these establishments to perhaps conceal inferior food. That's another level.
Yeah.
Is that, oh, well, they're cooking bad food. And
I think I got that meme when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. These Chinese restaurants, they use cheap ingredients and people put MSG on it in order to trick you into thinking it's good.
Yeah. Plus, just to give you an idea, just how varied the symptoms of Chinese restaurant syndrome become. Again, they kind of run the gamut of anything you might complain of after a meal at a restaurant. It just depended on who was reporting the symptoms. According to Mosby's paper, they range from, you know, mild headache to depression to sexual arousal and, quote, an irresistible urge to undress.
Now, that may have been a misinterpretation of people unbuckling their belts after eating a large meal at a Chinese food restaurant.
Yeah, if you eat an enormous plate of General Tso's chicken, once it became established in the 1970s as the American with the emphasis on American Chinese dish, you might have to undress a little bit to make it home. You may sweat a little bit. You may, in some cases, feel a little ashamed, as I have at times, for eating a dish so inauthentic at a restaurant that has more authentic dishes available.
Oh, I'm sure they don't judge you.
No, they're just happy that I'm there, I'm sure. But still, just to drive home the fact that just about anything you might experience after a meal was thrown at this just sort of elusive, amorphic idea of Chinese restaurant syndrome. So to this day, studies continue to be inconclusive regarding the additive health effects here. There's a passionate debate on either side of the issue.
And that's true. I mean, food is one of those things that gets people really animated, especially online. I just noticed people have incredibly intense opinions about food and food additives, maybe even as much as their political opinions.
Oh, yeah. And it doesn't help either that the scientific studies continue to look into the benefits, the pros and cons of everything from wine to coffee to salt to various types of calories. I mean, it's hard to keep up, right? Because one thing there's a study that comes out and says one thing is bad for you 1 year, and then you just wait a few years and it's flip-flopped in another study that manages to rise to the surface of media attention.
Yeah, and I think we should also hedge here and say that any food substance, anything that's part of your diet, may have interesting effects, good or bad, that we can find out about. Now, us saying that there is not a clear picture, that there's anything to worry about with normal levels of intake of MSG, that isn't to say that you can't use MSG in ways that could be harmful. We don't know. I mean, maybe if you're eating huge quantities of this stuff, or maybe future research will discover effects we don't know about yet. But as of today, there is no special reason to be concerned about moderate intake of MSG.
Right. I mean, maybe if a racial stereotype pro wrestling manager were to throw it into your eyes, that would be harmful. But as far as anyone can tell, the consensus seems to be that a very few select individuals may react to large quantities of MSG on an empty stomach, but otherwise it is safe for the vast majority of people.
So stop with those spoonfuls of MSG before breakfast. It's just not good.
Yeah.
The major food and health organizations don't say that there's anything to worry about, right? The FDA and World Health Organization, too.
Yeah. In 1995, the FDA issued a large-scale review by the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology, and an international research review in 1987 by the World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations all ruled on this as well. And they said, it's safe for the vast majority of people, which is something that you can say for a vast number of additives out there. People have differing reactions to certain things, but we're not throwing out the salt because of it. And we want to drive home again too that glutamates are in other foods. There are other ways to glute up a food product that don't involve actually using monosodium glutamate.
If you've seen recipes, and more of them are popping up these days as more people come to understand food science, that beef up a pot of soup or something like that by adding one of these glutamate-rich ingredients to it. They say, add anchovies or add Marmite or add soy sauce or something like that. You're adding glutamates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, it's still everywhere.
You're not putting MSG directly in. You're doing pretty much the same thing.
Right. And as far as we can tell, there's nothing significantly different about it being carried by the salt crystals as opposed to being in the food in other ways.
Yeah.
Julia Moskin wrote an excellent article on MSG for the New York Times back in 2008. And she pointed out that while the USDA requires labeling for MSG, they don't for all other glutamates in your food, especially processed foods like chips. This is a quote from her article. She says, alternatively, they may also be included under certain terms like vegetable broth or chicken broth. Thus, these ingredients are now routinely found in products like canned tuna. Vegetable broth is listed as an ingredient. It contains hydrolyzed soy protein, canned soup, low-fat yogurts and ice creams, chips, and virtually everything ranch-flavored or cheese-flavored. Thus, the richest source of umami remains your local convenience store. Grab a tube of Pringles or a bologna sandwich, and glutamic acid is most likely lurking there somewhere.
This whole thing about the labeling of MSG, it kind of makes me think about the GM foods labeling issue, because in both cases – so some people want there to be a law where any food that is produced by an organism that has been genetically modified through laboratory procedures, because of course all crops have been genetically modified through agriculture. It's just a less accurate form of genetic modification. So people want these foods labeled, right? You label them so people know what they're getting. And on one hand, I kind of can't be opposed to that because I don't know. I mean, giving people more information about the products that they're consuming, I mean, that seems like it's hard to disagree with that, right?
Right.
Just transparency, information. The only hesitation I would have to it is that it does tend to send a signal that there's something inherently to be worried about with genetically modified foods. It's almost as if the government is telling you, like, this is something that's maybe dangerous and you should be concerned, when there's no indication that's the case. And the same thing is true with MSG. I mean, I guess I'm in favor of labeling just because I'm in favor of all forms of transparency, but I do kind of worry that when you make foods containing MSG have some kind of special label, it stigmatizes it in a way that, you know, is unfair. There are other food additives we have no indication are any safer than MSG that don't require a special label.
Oh yeah, I agree. I mean, certainly too, when you get into like the fear of chemicals with MSG, chemical itself becomes this bad word where we're ignoring the fact that, of course, all food is made of chemicals. We are chemical beings. We live in a chemical world. Our terms have a way of getting ahead of us, rolling out of control.
Now, Robert, here's the thing. Would you ever eat a piece of chicken fowl flesh that has been saturated in a bath of dihydrogen monoxide and sodium chloride?
Well, you put it like that, then I start asking questions.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds pretty sick, but obviously what I've just described is chicken that has been brined in water and table salt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most good chicken is brined. It helps it stay juicy when you cook it. So, yeah, we know that these chemical names bring a lot of stigma with them. We're like, oh, here's a good one. Do you know the IUPAC name for lactose milk sugar?
Lactose milk sugar?
Just milk sugar, lactose. It's mm-hmm. beta-D-galactopyranosyl-1,4-D-glucose.
Oh, that sounds like something that would infect an astronaut when they landed on a doomed world.
Right. It's this demonic prion that comes out of the rocks to take over your brain. So anyway, I think we should try to come up with a simple rebranding of glutamate that can allow people to consume it without this chemical stigma, right? So you just call dihydrogen monoxide water. Of course, dihydrogen monoxide isn't the primary name anybody mm-hmm. uses. It's like it's a hoax name that people came up with to make a joke. But of course, it does accurately describe the content of water.
Yeah, I think to come up with some rebranding here, to come up with a better name for MSG. We should sample some. We have some here on the table. While you were speaking, I just cut up an avocado here. So I even have some chopsticks here if you want to get semi-authentic.
Well, let's cut a couple pieces of avocado here and then put let's have a regular piece first and then put some accent.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and
eat the second one.
Eat a normal piece and unaugmented slice here. It's good. Nice and buttery. Definitely ripe.
Avocado is always good.
Now I'm going to sprinkle some of our additive on there.
Now, you know, it's we didn't properly blind this test, did we?
No, this is not a very scientific.
So we know the difference, but I would say that I think I can naturally taste the difference. The one with the accent on it has a kind of deeper, richer, meatier flavor.
Yeah, there's definitely a saltiness to it as well, though less salty than if I had just poured salt on it.
Right.
If that makes sense. Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm definitely getting a sense of the umami and the salt, as if it has almost been like it's been misted with soy sauce in some almost invisible way.
Noel, I'm sure you can edit out some of these gross mouth noises.
No, more gross mouth noises. It's what we need. If he can, find some on one of those websites.
Okay, Robert. Any irresistible urges to undress? Or how long do we have to wait for the irresistible urge to undress
I
to set in?
My normal, like my base level of feeling like I need to take my clothes off is it remains the same. Has virtually not changed at all, thanks to the MSG.
Scale of 1 to 10, what is that base level?
In the summer, I guess it tends to be like a 5, you know?
That's the yoga in you talking.
Yeah.
Is there a special word for this, naked yoga?
Naked yoga?
There's like hot yoga.
I don't know. Yeah, there. I mean, I've seen it. You can go to naked yoga classes here in Atlanta.
I've never been
to one, but you can go. I mean, issues of, shared nudity in a semi-public environment aside, like if you want to really feel what your body's doing and see what your body's doing in these various poses, it makes sense, right?
Okay, so rebranding of MSG, what's your word? I came up with one, but my wife actually came up with a better one. So the one I tried to do was savor. Kind of makes sense. It's savory.
Mm-hmm.
Put some savor on your food.
I can see it in the advertisement too. Savor. Savor.
My wife Rachel suggested umami salt.
I think that's perfect.
That's the best one.
I mean, I think too, all the fancy salts you can buy these days, like the Himalayan pink salt. At our house, we have this like mushroom-infused salt.
Rosemary salt.
Yeah, so why not just market it as umami-infused salt? Like that sounds perfect. It sounds a little bit science-y, but steeped in culinary terms, not chemical terms. And I think that's what a lot of it comes down to, like the terminology for your food. Are you defining it by, its exotic aspects and then drawing in whatever your opinions are regarding the foreign nature of the food, or is it based in inhuman chemicals, or is it something comfy and mouth shaped like umami?
Well, food always tastes better when it's got a nickname, right? You know, you never want the name of your food to be all that descriptive. Mm-hmm. Like just accurately descriptive food names are not appetizing. You don't want chicken packed with broth.
Yeah,
you know, you want happy fowl package.
Well, like schnitzel sounds great, right? It's fun. It doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, but it's a fun word. Sounds better than like meat that has been beaten and fried and smothered.
Right.
So yeah, there's a lot in the words we choose to describe our food. And I think that the story of MSG, our continuing story of MSG, really drives that home.
Now, I know in the wake of this episode, a lot of people are going to be very angry with us because we have not accurately described how all the scientists are bought off shills and how there's some evil industry that wants to poison our bodies to get us addicted to drugs that they also sell. I don't know. What is the conspiracy theory with MSG?
The Illuminati created MSG in order to fake the rapture. So that believers would ignore the second coming of the Savior.
You're getting us back into last week's territory.
I'm getting my notes confused a little bit here.
Well, if you do actually want to get in contact with us, you can always do so as usual. And hey, pretty soon we are going to be in New York. We should
That's
mention
right.
this.
That's right. We're going to be at Star Trek Mission New York.
Yeah, that's going to go from September 2nd to 4th, 2016. It's going to be in New York City. And our panel is going to be on Friday afternoon. So if you're interested in seeing us, you can come check us out there.
Yeah, yeah. See us, hear us, and you know, there'll be an opportunity to chat with us after the presentation as well. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be a little Star Trek-y, but not like so Star Trek-y. That you're going to know all the answers already.
Personally, I'm afraid that we are not Star Trek-y enough for the Star Trek convention.
I think we're just the right level of Star Trek-iness, you know? It's like people go into a dessert bar, right? And we are offering something where people look at it and they're like, huh, well, that I didn't expect to see that in the dessert bar. I will get that instead of pudding. That's the way I'm kind of looking at it.
We're like the surrounded by cookies. We're going to be the brown butter nut muffin.
Yeah, yeah. We're the fig bar of dessert delights at this particular conference. And there, you know, if you're into Star Trek, it seems like the place to be because tons of guests, tons of cool panels and talks. Definitely worth checking out.
All right. So, Robert, in the meantime, if they want to find us, where can they do that?
Oh, head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com, which should have a facelift by the time this episode comes out. Come check out. See how it's all working. Let us know what's not working. All the joys of a new website. And also, you'll find links out to our various social media accounts, such as Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram. We are Blow the Mind on pretty much all of those, but you can also generally find us on those platforms by just searching for Stuff to Blow Your Mind.
And as always, if you want to get in touch with us directly, you can email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
Well, how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.